Solitaire Rose Novelcast, After the Fall, Episode 2. First, I want to apologize for the technical difficulties with the previous episode. It was the first episode, and somehow, while uploading, the MP3 got scrambled. Still don't know how that happened, but was able to find the original audio files, fix that, and upload the new one. So if you listened to the first episode and it was a mess, go back. I have uploaded a cleaned up, better version of it. I'm still trying to figure out if I should do a recap during these openings. I figure that people, if they're going to listen, they're going to start with episode 1. But if you're jumping in with episode 2, I'd just like to let you know that these are audiobooks. And as audiobooks, they go in sequential order, and I'm basically taking the novels that I've written over the years, turning them into audiobooks. And then as each one is done as podcast episodes, I will take the giant file, put that into a large audiobook, and also have the book available for sale on Amazon as an ebook. And if they become successful enough, maybe we'll get print books, or an editor will pick it up. What I'd like to ask you, the listener, is for the feedback. I got some great feedback, some things that really helped, especially with the with the technical difficulties, but also people giving feedback on the novel already, which is it's really good to hear. When you put a novel out, you really don't get a lot of feedback, especially when you put out fiction and such. People don't write letters. They don't do anything unless you're, you know, making stuff that's really fan-based. So I want to thank everybody for the feedback. If you'd like to give feedback, just email me at corey.strode@gmail.com. Subject, Novelcast. And hopefully I will get better at making sure that everything's right when it's uploaded. So, for if this is your first episode to listen to, a couple of things. You're starting in the middle, so you may want to go back to episode 1. Also, there are breaks in a novel where there are pauses when you switch from scene to scene. I denote those with this sound. And now, back to After the Fall, Part 2. At first, Mick thought it would be like that old movie, The Road Warrior. He got the best car he could find and started driving all around the country. He wasn't the only one, and they would communicate on CB radios they found at truck stops once the cell phones no longer worked. They would tell each other where there was gas. They drove around the country in packs, killing zombies, taking what they wanted, and answering to no one. He even killed a few he wasn't sure were zombies. Didn't matter. The cops had given up long before he started. After a time, the gas got harder and harder to find. There were huge gang wars over the remaining stores of it. He dropped out of the wars when most of his tribe were taken out in a night raid. He'd found a place to lay low and listened to the CB, then shortwave, as he heard about the tribes at war with each other. It was good for a year's worth of listening. Eventually, the CB wouldn't have any chatter on it. Once in a while, he'd hear someone asking if they could be heard, but he didn't want to let them know he was still out there. Might be a rival. A while after that, the shortwave went dead. It wasn't a thing where he woke up one morning and it had all stopped. It was slow and happened over time. He'd use the last stores of gas and kerosene to power a generator until he read a book on how to use solar cells for electricity. It was like all the lights going out in the neighborhood, but on more of a global scale. Fewer people, fewer languages, till finally, silence. He still turned on the shortwave every few days to listen to the static. Once in a while, you would hear someone talking. They didn't sound like they were doing well. Usually it was a language he didn't understand, but sometimes it was English. He listened to one man read the entire New Testament over a week, but then he went silent at the end of Revelation. Sometimes he heard people asking if anyone heard them and to please contact them. When it was a woman, he would think about it. He never did, though. He worried it could be a trap. So he would just listen until someone else talked to them, and they discussed where they could meet and how they could get there safely. There were men who did the same thing, but he wasn't all that interested in what they did. One woman said she had found an entire city of people, and they were building a fortress to make everyone inside safe. She talked in detail about it, how it was in Southern California, and all were welcome. He was packing to go when someone came on and said an earthquake had destroyed the walls, and the survivors of the first onslaught were taking off to regroup. The woman cried as she told the story. He cried too as he listened. He hadn't cried in so long he didn't know if he was sick or not when the tears started flowing. Now he kept the radio off most of the time. He'd turn it on and listen to the static every few days, though, just to see. He had a nice hidden place, a deserted bomb shelter in the middle of South Dakota. During the winter, the zombies weren't around. He had no idea if they hibernated or just went south. But they weren't there once the first hard freeze hit. Once the weather started getting cold, they were a hell of a lot slower. During the winter, he'd hunt game, raid the cities, and look for weapons. He'd been there for 4 winters now, and the pickings were getting slim. This was farm country, not a weapons depot. The farmers usually had a shotgun and a pistol and more ammo than they would have needed in their old lives. He'd pack it all up, and if they had a tractor with some gas in it, he'd load as much as he could get, drive the tractor until it broke down or ran out of gas. Most of the time, though, he'd have to bring it back on a cart or in a backpack. The rest of the time he'd stay in the bomb shelter, reading whatever books he had scrounged up during the year, hunting small game like rabbit and squirrel, and making sure that the zombies didn't know he was around. They weren't as prevalent as they had been when he first got here. Back then they were everywhere. There was a lot of them. Every night they would be banging on the door to the bomb shelter, somehow knowing he was in there. For the last year, he only saw one or two a week. They probably didn't come back from wherever they went in the winter. It wasn't like they could drive to Florida and back. When he had gas for the generator, he'd used it to watch movies and play video games. He hadn't wasted it either. There'd been a 50-gallon tank on a nearby farm, and he'd been able to milk that out for over a year. When it ran out, he started reading. He found out how some hippies had turned solar and took the books back to the house. After he read them and figured out how to get them to work, he went back, took the solar panels, and all the equipment. Now he used the solar energy just for what he needed. By then, he didn't want to waste the energy on video games. He'd use the big batteries the man kept so that he could run the space heaters during the winter. Video games and movies bored him now. He'd rather just read. One summer, he found a house that had all of the Executioner novels. He'd spent that summer reading over 400 Mac Bolan adventures, all of which ended with someone getting shot by Mac Bolan. He found the Destroyer books in the same house, but they didn't take their stuff seriously. There was a lot of jokes and people were killed like it was some insane kung fu movie. Bomb shelter was filled with the spoils of his raids. Things like hair clippers so he didn't look like a wild man. Tons of radios that had long since been taken apart for different experiments in trying to create a transmitter. CD players and boxes of CDs that he rarely listened to. Computer parts and stacks of software that he'd lost interest in. Mickey was a thin man, but had the body of a runner. He didn't care to exercise, but hunting rabbits and other game made it so you had to learn to run. He would hike every day as well, hoping he might see another person. When he first moved into the shelter, he didn't want anyone else around. He'd worried that his rivals were still looking for him, since he was the only one who'd survived the raid. There were people who had tried to enter his shelter the first year or so, but he wouldn't let them in and ordered them down the road, or he'd shoot them. After he was sure he wasn't being hunted anymore, he'd look for people, someone to talk to. He'd see people traveling on the interstate once in a while. Sometimes he'd wave them down and talk to them, making sure they heard his voice as he approached. Zombies don't talk, so that's how you tell if someone's alive. Most of the time, they ask him to come along, but he'd say no. He'd offer to let them stay, and some of them did for a while. They'd always leave, though. It was never because they were mad at him. It was never because they were mad at him, but because they wanted to get on their way. Then they'd leave him alone, just him and his things. He had a small pack of dogs he fed as well. It was easier to hunt when you have dogs, and while zombies don't eat them, they do react whenever there's one of the dead bastards around the place. It was just good security. He didn't even name the dogs anymore, since there were about 10 of them. One good thing was that the dogs were hunters, and he didn't have to feed them very often. They'd get their own game at night if he didn't have anything to feed them. However, there were deer and wild pigs, and so they were able to keep to themselves without a hell of a lot of trouble. Night was falling, and the dogs were all laying around the perimeter, quiet. It would be a good night to just relax. He had meat drying to be made into jerky for the winter, and a big pot of stew cooking so he'd share with the dogs later. But there wasn't anything he needed to do. He looked around outside one last time, then went deep into the shelter and turned on the computer. It whirred and hummed, slowly turning on, draining the solar energy the batteries had been storing all day. As the screen came on, he fiddled with the mouse a bit, and a digitized map showed up on the screen. He pulled a microphone off the computer's tower and fired up the world he spent time in. He didn't see it as some video game, since it wasn't about winning anything. He'd started setting up his day in the virtual world while he sat in a chair he'd stolen from a bank president's office. He interacted with the characters in the fantasy world, had conversations with them, and went to his fantasy job, and spent the night as if he'd gone to town to meet up with old friends. And when he was done, the stew was burned, and none of the dogs would eat it. Once Charles got the last of the four kids to sleep, he was able to come downstairs and relax on the futon in the living room with Vic. They checked all the boarded windows and doors with the kids so that they felt safe, and locked the gates around the house before dark, as they had every night. For some reason, the nights were more active. But after being in this house for 3 years and never having any problems once the fences were up, they could afford to relax at night. Everyone was safe, and no one had to stay up at night to keep watch anymore. Vic was reading a hardcover book, and half lying, half sitting on the futon, not looking up from his book, as he said, "They finally go to sleep?" "Yeah," Charles said as he sat in the middle of the futon, picking Vic's legs up so that he could sit down, then laying them across his lap, leaning back and closing his eyes. Jesse's starting to ask questions about if we'll ever get to see other people. Eventually we're going to have to go see who lives in the area and see if we can make alliances with them. Vic put the book down. "Last time we did that, it didn't go well. I'm not looking to relive the whole Texas thing again. We aren't in Texas, and that was 3 years ago." "Still," Vic said, a disgusted look on his face. Charles understood why he didn't want a repeat of that. They'd found a very secure house in South Texas near what used to be Houston, and worked on making it their home. He only had three of the kids then, Jesse, Rich, and Martin. All of them were under 7 years old. When they went into the main settlement, it hadn't taken long before one of the people there asked if they were interested in a woman to help them with the kids. It didn't take long for the people to decide they didn't want a gay couple raising three kids who weren't theirs near their settlement. Civilization fell, and the people took it as a sign that they didn't have to put up with people they felt were evil or cursed or perverts. Vic was the one who wanted to move on. Charles wanted to gut it out, just like he had in Florida before the fall. But Vic didn't trust the people there, which made him more like them than Charles wanted to think about. And he thought they might come out, break the fence, ruin the locks on the gates, or any number of other things to make it so the zombies were able to get in the house and get at the kids. Charles couldn't fault him there. Each of the kids were given to him by people who were asking for help. "Please, take my child away from here." Jesse's mom was hooked on drugs as the city they lived in was shutting down, medicating herself against the horror. Between putting herself in a better place with heroin and selling herself to get more, she'd met Charles and his former lover. "Why can't you say his name? Was it too much when he became one of them? Is that why you never say his name? Why you won't even think it?" His mind kept bringing it up until he shoved it back into his memory and begged them to take her little girl. Jesse was 12 now, starting to hit puberty, which scared Charles more than he would let on. He knew nothing about what happened with girls when they hit that age, seeing as how he'd been an only child and rarely had female friends before the fall. Rich's parents were dying, and Rich was trying to get them to drink water when he saw them on the street and asked them to help his parents. Charles and Vic had been together for a few months after meeting in a refugee camp, and they stayed with Rich's parents, never even learning their names until they died. Rich was 10 now and had an infectious smile, and would spend most of the day working in the garden or playing with the animals outside. He didn't care for their dog, a border collie named Duke, but loved feeding the sheep and pigs, more than just about anything else they had around the house. Martin was a smart kid, living on his own, hiding in abandoned buildings, and eating things he was able to steal from stores that hadn't been fully raided. He was almost nothing but skin and bones, and almost feral. But now he was the one who spent days drawing and wanted to learn how to paint. He drew pictures of how things used to be, not how they were. They never talked about the zombies, and never talked about his life before they met him. The newest, Sarah, was barely 7 years old and had been given to them as they left Texas by one of the women who'd been calling them dirty faggots. She was scared of them for the first few months and would eat away from the rest of the family. Eventually, she moved closer and closer to the other kids, and after a year, it was like she had been with them the whole time, except she was still shy. She hadn't really warmed up to Vic much, which broke his heart. But he never said anything to anyone. He would just get a look in his eyes when she would turn away from him without saying anything when he would try to talk to her. Now, Vic no longer tries. They had moved east and north, finding an abandoned mansion about 50 miles south of Memphis that had probably once been the heart of a plantation. It had taken a good 2 months to get everything secured and 3 months more to get the place cleaned up. While they were getting the place secured, they would take shifts at night watching the basement door, praying that no one got past the basement door, praying they wouldn't fall asleep. Once the place was safe and secure, they started gathering up some of the animals that had been on farms in the area and found that they were mostly alone. There was an older couple that lived in a house a few miles away, and once in a while travelers would come by to stay the night. Mostly they were either headed to Texas or Graceland. Rumors were that a large city was growing up again in the area outside Houston that they had tried to live in. The people there were supposedly trying to gather up as many people as they could to try and take back an area large enough that they could keep the zombies out and rebuild an entire city. Vic and Charles privately dismissed it as a pipe dream, but the people would have such passion in their eyes that they could only wish them well. They just weren't willing to come to face with the fact that this was how they lived now. Y2K had come late, after people had completely forgotten about it, and it had nothing to do with a computer. Graceland folk were religious and talked about going to Graceland the same way Muslims would talk about going to Mecca. At first, it was only a couple every few months, easy to dismiss as a joke. Now there were caravans that passed by on the highway, horse-drawn carriages, lines of people in sackcloth and ashes. It would have scared him if the people weren't so sincere. "Penny for your thoughts," Vic said, and Charles opened his eyes and looked around the house. They had filled the mansion with ratty furniture from abandoned houses in the area, had candles burning all around them, and the windows were covered with plywood held in place by nails so big Charles wondered if there was any way to ever pull them out of the wood. "I was just wondering about how we got here, and where we go from here. You know, the typical stuff you worry about when not running for your life." Vic smiled, and in the candlelight the wrinkles starting to form in his face looked much deeper, and the gray in his hair looked almost white. He reached over and pulled Charles down so that he was lying on his chest. "Tomorrow we'll feed the pigs, we'll tend the garden, we'll make 3 meals, and then we'll do it again and again. Remember, when hungry, eat your rice, when tired, sleep. The fools laugh, but the wise man understands. We are the wise men." "But what about the kids? They are starting to get older, and soon they will need to meet some other people. Jessie's already asking. I know it's only been 3 years here, but in another 5 years or so, she'll want someone in her life. And then there will be her children." "You sound like my mother," Vic said, kissing Charles lightly on the top of his head. It was comforting in a domestic way. "Which is probably why I love you. We'll worry about those things when they happen. It's not like we have to get her ready for the senior prom and hope her boyfriend isn't some scraggly kid with a drug habit and bad hygiene." "Still," Charles said, his will to continue the conversation fading. It felt nice to be in the arms of someone who cared about him, even after all the horror they'd gone through. "Still nothing. You worry too much. For all we know, her true love may come through on one of the caravans and will take her off to California to be in the movies." Charles laughed. A rare thing in the world now, and he hugged Vic. "Okay," he said, "I'll quit worrying about it. But you get to be the one to tell her that being a stripper is a bad career choice." "Deal." Vic shifted on the futon so that they were both more comfortable. "Are we going to make it to our room, or will we fall asleep down here again and have sore necks all day?" Charles answered by hugging Vic closer and closing his eyes. Another day had passed, and all was right with their world. How many days would there be like that? Ray was finished with guard duty, but his replacement hadn't shown up yet. It wasn't like people didn't know when they were supposed to take post, he thought to himself, since the bugler announced it every 4 hours. Ray was in his late 20s, had his hair in a military-approved cut, not long enough to touch his collar. Some of the girls on the base thought that he was attractive. He even thought he was good enough to run around on Susan, but she would get so mad when he even looked at another woman he had decided he'd have to break up with her before he was sleeping with anybody else. And if he did that, no woman on base would want to hook up with him anyway, since Susan was well-connected. So a casual fuck with someone who wasn't Susan was a thought that had to stay a fantasy for when he was falling asleep, facing away from Susan. Even without a government, there was politics, he thought to himself and smiled. I'm here, dude, he heard behind him. Sure enough, Dan was there, looking as if he'd slept in his uniform and not bothered to even brush his teeth before reporting for duty. You may be here. Are you fit? Ray asked. Fuck you, Dan said, irritated. I overslept a bit. I'm good to go. Not all of us are Joe Soldier, you know. I would have been out of the army if things hadn't gone to shit. Ray didn't show his disapproval, but instead handed Dan the logbook and light source. It's been quiet, but the guys on the North Quad say that there was a bit of activity. It was too far away to know if it was travelers or bogeys, but the CO once checks into the dark spots every 10 minutes, instead every 20. I've been doing it every 7 just to keep awake. It may be October, but it's not getting cold tonight. An Alabama winter's like summer everywhere else, Dan said. Another cliche. Dan nodded and saluted, not because he respected Dan, but because he wanted to go home. Because he was living with a relative of the CO, he was able to get into married housing. He walked back in the dark. A few fires were burning to provide light, but the torches or outside fires were far enough apart that the base looked as if it was empty. Soldiers on duty were at the fences, watching for movement in the night. A few months after the dead started getting up and deciding their favorite meal was human beings, martial law had been approved by the Congress. Ray'd only been in the military a short time, joining up when his college shut down, helping to win the War Against the Dead. Now the base had become its own society, taking care of the soldiers and their families, shunning outsiders and protecting the base. Tom Marshall, the commanding officer, didn't treat it as if civilization had fallen. He treated it as if the world was waiting for everything to turn back around, and once it did, they would rejoin it as the people in charge. Even Susan would talk about a time when things were back to normal. In the years since communications went down, the government disbanded and people pretty much decided it was over. She kept her credit cards and dreams of Macy's. He gave up on it before then. Didn't tell anyone. But when the people on CNN reported that the president had declared martial law and the vice president was to be secured in a secret location, he knew it was over. He stayed with his troop at the base because he knew that was the best place to be when things broke. He stayed with his division at the base because he knew that the best place to be when things broke down would be with a bunch of people holding a lot of weapons behind a wall. The barracks were quiet as he walked by. Sometimes the men inside would stay up late, gambling with worthless paper money, or worse yet, having some of the women on the base dance for them. Women were outnumbered on the base by about 2-1, and they knew it. Each one had power, the kind of power that someone has when they control a supply. He walked by the barracks, hoping the rest of the base would be quiet, too. They had finished most of the harvest, and the soldiers who were on the lower rungs of the command chain had been working on securing more food and storing it for the coming months. Alabama may not have cold winters, but things don't grow as well as they did in August. And the dead from the north would come down as well. He shuddered thinking about it. Soldiers who showed up since everything went to hell and had used to live in states like Minnesota would tell stories about how they'd find zombies frozen solid, how they would shatter when they were shot, their eyes still open in horror, lying on the ground in pieces. He'd never lived up north, never wanted to. The idea of getting 3 to 4 months where you don't have to worry about the bastards showing up, trying to rend you limb from limb, was enough to make him want to brave the cold. Not that it was allowed to leave. If you had proper ID and could prove you were in the military at the end, you could get into the base. If you couldn't prove it, or your papers proved you were former military, you were told to keep humping down the road. If you didn't agree with the ruling of the commander and tried to push it, you'd end up regretting your decision. At least for a short time. They had weapons on the base. Foodstuffs, emergency equipment, and other secrets. Things that before the fall, they weren't allowed to be working on. Weapons and technology that could have gotten people very upset. Now the CEO kept those things secret in case things did start up again. He couldn't be accused of breaking the law. Law. Ray chuckled under his breath when he thought about that word. They still functioned under military law at the base. The only reason they did was to keep a slim veneer of civilization. People liked having laws. They liked knowing what was allowed and what wasn't. They liked having the CEO as their leader, so that they only had to think about getting food, keeping things clean, and doing their duty. It relieved you of the responsibility to think for yourself. Ray thought that was what he wanted when he joined the military, but now he wasn't sure anymore. It's one thing to have someone telling you that if you follow certain rules, the world will right itself when things are crumbling around you. But when you see that doesn't work... He snapped out of his thoughts when he got home. It wasn't much by old standards, but on the base it was one of the better places. Small, two-bedroom military house that had been used for married soldiers who had one or two kids. He lived in it with Susan because of his rank and her family connections. It was a flat box on a slab of concrete. The rooms inside were square, functional, and seemed as if they were designed by someone with a T-square and no imagination. The house was dark, and pale moonlight shone through the windows so that he wouldn't bump his leg on the threadbare furniture they had in the place. He put his gear away in the closet and reminded himself to clean and service it first thing in the morning. The bedroom was small, just enough room for a dresser, a king-size bed, and a pair of nightstands with lanterns on them. Susan was sleeping. In the dark, her long blonde hair looked dark, and her face was covered in shadow. She slept on her back, and he could see her chest slowly rising and falling. She didn't snore anymore, not since she quit sleeping on her side, and on her nightstand was a half-read romance novel and an alarm clock. Wound up, of course. He laughed to himself quietly. There was no more government, no more cities, no more hope, yet she wants to know exactly what time it is and wants to be up at 6:45 in the morning. Time. What a fucking joke. Days bled into each other. Without a calendar to remind him, he would have no idea what day of the week it was. The only reason anyone still cared was because they felt they needed to, but it's not like anyone ever got an actual day off. Duty rosters were 7 days a week because of whatever bullshit reason they invented to keep people scared enough to do what was needed. It didn't even matter to him what month it was anymore, other than each month had its own set of tasks. It was October, so food supplies were replenished. November, the fences would be worked on, and any improper links would be replaced, and any weak joints or connections would be fixed. And so on, until they died. That was his life. Get up, clean his gear, listen to Susan talk about the good old days, eat shit, and complete his orders. Worth it? Fuck no. Susan was nice enough, he guessed. She was prettier than most, with a small nose and large blue eyes, and yes, she had generous breasts that caught the attention of nearly every soldier on the base. He still got offers from soldiers who hadn't been chosen by one of the women on the base to let them see her breasts. They offered to take shifts, give him food rations. Some even offered alcohol they had made in defiance of base orders, just to see her breasts. Damn, but the women had power. Susan never used hers, though. She loved Ray. She'd fallen in love with him before the fall, but he hadn't much cared about her until it started to look like the gates were being locked for good. Ray was only as faithful as his options. He hated himself for it, too. She was beautiful, loved him, and loved having sex with him. He was never one of those men who had to beg for a lay from a woman. More often than not, a woman would want to sleep with him more than he wanted her. Problem was, Susan had no vision, no drive. She just wanted to wait here for things to start up again. He cursed himself as he got out of his clothes and into his nightwear, thinking about how he was an utter shitheel with no sense of decency. He had more than most of the men on the base, and he wasn't just taking it for granted, he was cursing it. There would be people on the base who would kill for his position, let alone people outside the base that would do far more. He slid under the covers, heard her stir slightly. He stopped kicking himself and moved over to lay next to her and kiss her on the forehead. "Sorry," he whispered, and moved back to his side of the bed. "Sorry for what?" she said drowsily, rolling over and putting a hand on his chest. "Just thinking too much again," he said, closing his eyes and feeling her hand caress him softly. "Wanderlust again?" He laughed quietly under his breath. "Not this time. I was just thinking about how dull it gets around here and how there isn't much to break the monotony." She slid over and lay on her side next to him, draping her arm around him and moving it up and down his chest lazily. That's a good thing. I think the last thing we need is excitement. Excitement means either they are trying to break in or some people here have to go. He shuddered. There was only one punishment for breaking a major order: being sent off the base without weapons or food. One night he had been on guard duty when a man had been put off base for stealing food. He was marched outside at sunset, and he clung to the fence, begging for someone to give him a gun, just a gun. He had cried, saying he knew he couldn't come back, but it was inhuman to leave him outside without a gun. Ray had made sure to be as far away as he could from the man and still be considered at his post. He'd still heard it as the dead had come for him later. He couldn't remember the screams. Liar. But he could remember having to look away when the man simply gave up to his fate and walked slowly into the night, never to be seen again. He snapped back to where he was now and felt her hand caressing his hip. No, I don't want excitement, Bunny. His pet name for her, because he couldn't think of anything more endearing. I just keep thinking that there should be more than this. More than... There is, she said, and her hand slid under his waistband. He didn't think any more about routine that night, but instead how soft her touch was and how she would do anything he wanted as long as he pleased her as well. And there you go. That's the second part of the novel. As I said, there will be a new part every 2 weeks like clockwork, whether it kills me or not. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for the feedback. And I also would like to request that if you like what you hear, please get the word out. Word of mouth is the best advertising you can do for a podcast. And with a more experimental thing like this, the word of mouth is really going to help. One of the things, if you listen to me over on Crazy Comics and Stories and Solitaire Rose Radio, we are starting to do conventions. Joe and I are starting to go out. We will be recording at conventions. We want to meet people. We want to shake people's hands. And with the Crazy Comics and Stories, who knows? You stop by if you want. We'll talk to you for a bit. We'll get you in an episode. But for now, I'd just like it if you would let people know. Share the link. Share it on your Facebook page. Share it on Twitter. Share it on Instagram. I don't know how you'd share it on Instagram, but share it on Instagram. Share it on Tumblr. Share it everywhere you can. And just let people know that it exists, and maybe they'll like it. And if they like it, more people will listen. And as more people listen, who knows, maybe we'll do it a little more often. And maybe those ebooks will come out a little more often. Once again, I want to thank you for listening, and I'll be back in 2 weeks with the next section of After the Fall.